Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is episode 342, and we are covering the best of yesterday, March 21st, 2026.
We have a really great lineup today. We are looking at a massive shift in how the internet handles identity under the guise of child protection, a thoughtful piece on why good software takes time, the unintended consequences of publishers blocking the Internet Archive, George Hotz's new offline AI hardware called TinyBox, and finally, the end of a 46-year-old Linux tradition.
Let us actually start with that Linux story, because it is one of those quality of life changes that had the Hacker News comments blowing up. Ubuntu 26.04, which is codenamed Resolute Raccoon, is officially ending 46 years of silent pseudo passwords.
Yes. If you have ever used a Linux terminal, you know the anxiety of typing your password into a blank void. The cursor just sits there. You never know if it registered your keystrokes. But starting with the upcoming LTS release next month, every keystroke will echo an asterisk.
It is such a small change, but it ignited a fierce debate. The old behavior was a deliberate security decision from the 1980s to prevent shoulder surfing, but Ubuntu is transitioning to a ground-up rewrite of sudo and Rust, and the upstream developers merged a patch to enable password feedback by default.
The developers argued that the security benefit of hiding password length is negligible today. Most users use the same password for sudo as their graphical login, which already shows placeholder dots anyway. One commenter pointed out how many times they have been stuck wondering if their keystrokes were registering over a high-latency SSH connection.
Oh man, Sarah, I felt that comment in my bones. Typing password over a laggy connection and vigorously hitting the backspace key because you think you messed up or double-pasted something.
Exactly. And of course, there were the inevitable comments from people admitting they occasionally paste their pseudo password into a random Slack channel by mistake. But if you are a purist, do not worry, you can still revert it back to the silent prompt with a single line in your sudoers file.
Moving from fast typing to slowing things down, our next story is a blog post from Armin Ronacher titled, "Some Things Just Take Time."
This was a beautiful read. Armin has been maintaining open source projects for nearly two decades, and he wrote about how the current generation of startup founders and programmers is obsessed with speed, especially now that AI can write code so incredibly fast.
He used this great analogy about planting trees. You cannot mass produce a 50-year-old oak tree. You just have to wait. And he argues that we are pushing this instant gratification downstream, trying to remove all friction like reviews and compliance, and replacing it with what he calls vibe slop at inference speeds.
Vibe slop is such a perfect phrase for where we are at right now. He mentioned seeing Y Combinator startups just disappear without a trace after a few months because the founders got bored and moved on. The shelf life of software is shrinking, and with it, the trust and relationships you build with users.
The Hacker News comments really resonated with this. A user named Chris Newton had a fantastic point. He said, "Velocity is a vector quantity. Increased speed only gets you where you want to be sooner if you are heading in the right direction. If you use an AI agent to just blindly write features without a product vision, you are just running into dead ends faster."
I completely agree, Mike. Another commenter shared how they had been thinking about a complex math and AI project for 10 years. When they finally used Claude to help prototype it, it went super fast and they are close to a finished product. But they noted that without those 10 years of slow burn conceptual thinking, the AI would have just built a much worse product. The AI is a power tool, but you still need the blueprint.
Speaking of AI power tools, let us talk about George Hotz and his company TinyCorp. They hit the front page yesterday with TinyBox, which is an offline AI device with 120 billion parameters.
This is wild. They are selling these massive compute boxes directly on their website. They have a red version, a green version, and they are teasing an exabox for $10 million that requires a concrete slab to install.
But the best part, and what Hacker News completely fixated on, is the FAQ section of the website. It is incredibly blunt. People were asking if they could customize the box, or if TinyCorp could fill out supplier onboarding forms or accept alternate payments. And the answer to almost all of them is basically, no, we do not offer customization, wire transfer only. If you cannot order through the website, we will not help you.
A commenter pointed out how arrogant and almost hostile that tone is for B2B sales. Nobody is going to drop $10 million or even $65,000 through a generic web form without negotiating a warranty or going through procurement.
It is classic GeoHot, though. But beyond the marketing tone, the hardware proposition is really interesting. There is a growing sentiment that the future of AI needs to include locally trained models for everyone, not just relying on the big cloud providers. Having a box you can plug into a 240-volt circuit at your office to run massive models locally is a big deal for privacy and security.
True, though, as one user pointed out, relying on off-the-shelf consumer hardware packed into a custom box means you might be dealing with some serious heat exhaust issues. Still, the DIY hacker ethos of the whole project is exactly why it got so much traction on the site. I also loved their hiring pitch where they say, "Invest with your PRs." They basically want you to prove your worth by contributing code before you even apply.
Our next story touches on the friction between AI companies and the rest of the web. The Electronic Frontier Foundation published a piece called "Blocking Internet Archive Won't Stop AI, But Will Erase Web's Historical Record."
This is a really concerning trend. In the last few months, major publishers like the New York Times and the Guardian have started blocking the Internet Archive from crawling their websites. They are doing this using technical measures that go way beyond standard robots.txt rules.
The publishers are doing this because they are terrified of AI companies scraping their content to train models. They are already suing companies like OpenAI. But the EFF argues that blocking a nonprofit library like the Internet Archive is the wrong response. It is basically torching decades of historical documentation over a fight that the archive did not even start.
The comments on Hacker News provided some really good perspective from site operators. One user mentioned they have been battling an influx of extremely aggressive AI crawlers, and they had to implement strict blocking measures just to keep their servers online. They realized they might have accidentally blocked the Internet Archive in the crossfire. It is hard to distinguish a good bot from a bad bot when they're all hammering your site.
It is a tough situation, because as much as we love the Wayback Machine, some commenters pointed out that archiving organizations are not always perfectly polite either. There is a group called Archive Team, which is separate from the Internet Archive, and they explicitly ignore robots.txt, because their goal is to aggressively save sites that are about to go offline.
Which is a noble goal, but if you are a site admin watching your bandwidth spike, you do not really care about the noble goal. You just want your site to stay up. But the EFF makes a really solid point. Making material searchable and archiving it has long been recognized as fair use. If we let the panic over AI training destroy the public record, future researchers are going to find huge gaps in our digital history.
That leads us to our final and probably most heavily debated story of the day. An article from Dyn.org titled, "Do Not Turn Child Protection into Internet Access Control."
This is a deep dive into how age verification laws are expanding globally. The author argues that age verification is no longer just a narrow mechanism for adult websites. It's creeping into social media, gaming, messaging, and search. And politically, it's shifting the default state of the internet from open access to permissioned access.
The most alarming part of the article is how this is moving down the tech stack. It's not just websites asking for your birthday anymore. There are proposals for a persistent age status layer maintained by the operating system itself. Even Systemd in Linux has reportedly added an optional birth date field in response to these laws.
The author makes a really sharp distinction between content moderation and guardianship. Moderation is about filtering, but guardianship is the contextual responsibility of parents and teachers. You can't outsource that to a centralized identity provider or an operating system.
The Hacker News comments on this were intense. A user named Yaligan said the end goal here is not age verification, it's verified user identification. They argued that the slippery slope leads to eliminating online anonymity entirely, where every transaction is tied to your exact identity. They warned that very soon there will be services that require your date of birth or name just to gauge basic functionality.
But there was a really strong counter-argument in the thread, too. With the rise of AI, some people are asking if we actually need know-your-customer laws for the internet. One commenter brought up the recent telecom hacks that were allegedly done with the help of AI chatbots. They asked, if AI becomes powerful enough to alter lives on command, do we need to do away with anonymity?
That sparked a huge debate. People compared it to background checks for bank accounts or buying weapons. But then others fired back saying that online banking is not worth an omniscient global surveillance state. A minor information leak today can lead to swatting, losing your savings, or worse. The internet is not an innocent place, and stripping away anonymity makes vulnerable people even more of a target.
It is the ultimate double-edged sword. We want to stop bot farms and malicious AI agents,
but the proposed solutions seem to require building a massive corporate data grab that tracks real human beings everywhere they go online. It is definitely a trend we are going to be watching closely this year as these laws continue to roll out.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of HN Pod.
Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you spending part of your day with us.
If you want to read any of the articles or dive into the comment threads we talked about, you can find them on the front page of Hacker News.
We'll be back tomorrow with more of the top stories and discussions. Have a great day, everyone.